Hello, it's Debbie back with the Wednesday Herald and Review and Tribune from their websites on Wednesday, October 14th, 2015. This is part one. Starting out with recreation, Special Olympics Meridian Volleyball teams up. Oh, Special Olympics Meridian volleyball teams pair up for special lesson. Decatur. As they prepare for upcoming state competition, two Special Olympics volleyball teams got some help from Meridian High School players last week. More than 15 girls from the high school's volleyball team worked through drills with the athletes during their practice time October 5th at the Decatur Indoor Sports Center. In addition to serves and scrimmages, the hour included plenty of high fives and laughs. Like I tell them, things are bigger than wins and losses, said Meridian coach Tony Holly, who initiated the group practice. It's neat to have something like this where it's still volleyball, but it's more than just what your record going to be or what's going to happen in the postseason. The two teams, the Decatur Lions and Decatur Tigers, include a total of 13 athletes. They will travel to Rockford for the state competition on October 24th and 25th, the trip that also includes fun activities like a costume dance and dinner at a nice buffet, said Dana Floyd, Special Rec Association supervisor for the district. Most of the volleyball players have been participating for years. For instance, Shane Mackin has been playing for 8 years and said the practices and games are, quote, a great time here with my friends. Mackin, 28, is looking forward to the state competition and plans to attend the dance as Batman. His mother, Tressa Short, said he also participates in bowling and monthly dances that the Park District holds at the Knights of Columbus Hall for people with disabilities. He's made a lot of friends, she said, and she never worries about his safety. They're dependable. You're not guessing whether the show's going to go on or not, Short said. The Park District is a godsend, and they've been doing this for so long that everything is so well organized. Chelsea Getz, a 16-year-old junior at Meridian, said she previously loved her experience helping Special Olympics athletes through her softball team. In addition, as a yellow hat park leader this summer, she helped serve lunch to participants in the Parks District's Camp I Can. That was a nice one-on-one time with them, she said. I really enjoyed it. There wasn't any skill in particular Chelsea was hoping to teach her fellow athletes. She was simply hoping they'd have fun and learn just the love of the sport, really, she said. The joint practice included work on serves and passing through a variety of drills that Holly said are familiar to his team. The girls and Special Olympics athletes seemed to blend seamlessly and even gathered in small groups to take pictures together afterward. Holly said he wasn't surprised that his team took so well to the joint activities. They love the sport, and they love helping people and being involved. I was smiling more watching than their faces about how excited they were, he said. You tear up a little bit, too, because you see them get all excited and the team here is excited. This is cool. This is how it should be. The Special Olympics volleyball team members do not pay to travel to the state competition, Floyd said, but they were raising money to help pay for the trip. On Monday, their practice will include a serve-a-thon where athletes take pledges for how many serves they can get out of 20. To donate, contact Floyd at 429-7750, 429-7750. End of that article on the volleyball teams practicing together. From Lee News Service writer Kevin Barlow, Mitsubishi Union vote set Wednesday. Today. Bloomington. About 950 members of United Auto Workers Local 2488 are expected to vote during a 24-hour period that begins at 5 a.m. today on a tentative contract with Mitsubishi Motors North America. Details of that agreement were explained to union members during a meeting Monday at U.S. Cellular Coliseum, said Union President Rod DeVery. Only union members were allowed to attend the mo A meeting for retirees is scheduled for today at the Union Hall. Benefits representative will be on hand to answer questions. We wanted to get as much information as to everyone as possible, so we took our time, put together some informational packets, explained the details, and answered some questions. Then they'll have a day to think about it. The vote will be at the Union Hall. It says here on the side, I'm trying to figure out what we have, that they postponed the vote, the strike vote, until tomorrow, but they're voting on the contract today. Okay. I know they scheduled this meeting last week, but it happened to fall at the same time as the start of the Cubs-Cardinal game, said Bill Lockman at Peoria. I just wanted to get the information, and I'm sure we'll talk about it at work and be informed for the vote Wednesday. The contract expired August 28th, but as negotiations were about to start on a new deal, the company announced plans to close the plant. Production is scheduled to end November 30th, and then layoffs are expected to begin. The plant is expected to close officially in May. A deal is necessary, even though the plant will be closing, because the employees still have certain rights that the company must uphold, DeVary said. The contract was extended for 1 month and has remained in force on a day-to-day extension. DeVary expects results of the vote to be announced Thursday. I'm just not sure when, because we're giving them 24 hours. We're going to have a very tired election committee, but we wanted to do it right and make sure everyone had time to get there. End of that article. Next article, UAW postpones strike vote against Mitsubishi. Bloomington, a planned strike to authorization vote by members of UAW Local 2488 against Mitsubishi Motors has been suspended, union officials announced Wednesday night. But today's Wednesday. This is your reader, Debbie, saying, I am sorry. When I clicked on a side thing, they've got a new format for the website. I ended up with the news item that preceded the vote for today. So I apologize. They said they'd postponed it for a while, and it was postponed to the Wednesday, October 14th. So we're up to date on that. Next. Fatal Clinton fire possibly started in bedroom. Clinton officials say a fatal fire early Friday in a Clinton home most likely started in a bedroom, and the cause of another fire that destroyed a rural Clinton home Saturday remains undetermined. Annie Lucille Bolin, 81, was found inside the living room area of a home in the 1400 block of East Main Street. An ambulance crew responding to a medical alert call discovered the fire at 1:39 a.m., and she was pronounced dead at the scene a short time later. The investigators believed it started at the bed. They still have a little more work to do. In the other fire, the Clinton Fire Department was called at 3:49 p.m. Saturday to the home of Tyson and Tanya Herman at 12774 Honeytree Road. It was engulfed in fire when firefighters arrived. Both adults and three children escaped and now are staying at a local hotel. The American Red Cross has been assisting the family. We still have to meet with the family again before we can make a final determination, Dallas said of the fire's cause. That's the end of that article. Next article, company uses Ferris wheel ride as interview site. Chicago. As if job interviews weren't stomach-churning enough, imagine sitting through one while looping around in a giant Ferris wheel. Last month, top executives from ad agency Havas Worldwide commandeered 6 gondolas of the Ferris wheel at Chicago tourist hotspot Navy Pier to interview job candidates for several dozen positions, giving each applicant 2 revolutions of the wheel, about 15 minutes to convince them why they should be hired. Under a cloudless sky, candidates dressed more for brunch than for a job interview clutched resumes, laptops, and portfolios as they waited to be called into a gondola for one-to-ones with the company's top brass. An opportunity as unique for its early access to the C-suite as it was for the taking place 150 feet in the air. It's a street fight for talent, said CEO Paul Mirabella, 44, who's been at the helm of HAVA's Chicago office for 2 years. At the time of the event, the 500-employee office had 40 to 50 open positions, including creative, account management, strategy, finance, human resource, and executive-level positions, Mirabella said. The agency hoped the unconventional approach would surface innovative thinkers, relax the typically stressful interview environment, and show off Havas's own creative chops, Mirabella said. Spotlighting the Ferris wheel days before it was dismantled was also meant to align with the Chicago office's specialization in reinvigorating classic American brands, he said. The 20-year-old lakefront icon was taken down last month to be replaced next year by a taller Ferris wheel with temperature-controlled gondolas. Modernizing and contemporizing American brands is what we get out of bed with what we get out of bed for in the morning, said Mirabella, whose interviewing outfit consisted of black jeans, a black button-down shirt, and a black puffy Havas-branded vest that many of his employees also wore for the occasion. Havas Chicago clients include Hefty, Cracker Barrel, and Sears, Mirabella said. The event, promoted on LinkedIn and other social media channels as well as the company's network of interested applicants, drew about 130 RSVPs, but given a two-hour window for the event, only 30 applicants received confirmed spins on the wheel, while others hoped for luck on the waiting list. Elisa Marston, 35, a freelance account director who wore jeans and sunglasses for her Ferris wheel interview, said she hoped to be considered for an account service position. It's a beautiful day. It's a beautiful view. I've never been on a Ferris wheel before. So, two birds, job interview and be on the Ferris wheel before they tear it down, she said as she waited in line. Julie Shaw, 22, was the first to hop on the gondola with Mirabella. The Northwestern University student, who is set to graduate in December with a degree in integrated marketing and communications, said Havas is her dream company after she worked there for a week over the summer. After dismounting, beaming, after two spins on the wheel, Shaw said she believes interviews and Ferris wheels go together well because they both generate excitement. I think sometimes when you're in an interview, you don't always remember all the things you're supposed to say. You forget parts of yourself, tidbits that really push the interview forward, said Shaw in black leggings, a long brown sweater. And this time I actually remembered because I was so excited throughout. Havas is not new to flights of fancy. In a nod to the city's Bike to Work Week, the company this summer launched a bike while working campaign and built a bike desk complete with a computer and a lamp that could be pedaled around town. As the creative team brainstormed ideas for the interviewing event, they considered parking the bike desk in a public transit rail car and doing interviews while the train rumbled along, but they weren't sure it would fit, said Celia Jones, group brand director. The Ferris wheel was the most outlandish idea, Jones said, but it was also appropriate because as advertisers, we want to be sure we're constantly pushing ourselves, and they want employees who do the same, said Laura Manis, chief growth officer. We feel like we're competing with the Ubers and Googles for talent, Manis said as she awaited her first Ferris wheel interview of the day with an Uber marketing employee. Some who didn't land a ride milled around in hopes of snagging the ear of a Havas executive. Harley Griffiths, 23, who wore jeans and a seersucker blazer, had been laid off as an assistant account executive at ad agency Leo Burnett and was hoping to network and get his resume in someone's hands. He got about 2 minutes with group account director Lisa Ivia before she was pulled away for a gondola ride with another candidate. I look forward to following up, he said. Floyd McCraney, 32, was on the waiting list. He'd hoped for a chance to ride the wheel, even though he said, I'm outrageously afraid of heights. Once I'm in the moment, the fear goes away, said McCraney, a production director at CBS Radio, who wants a career change to do more copywriting and art directing. And as far as any potential recruitment, I think it shows courage. Acrophobes may feel at a disadvantage if they thought of dangling high above in a metal box sets the pulse racing. But Mirabella said candidates could show ingenuity with a counter offer to meet at sea level. If someone sent me an email and said, I can't interview on the Ferris wheel, but I'll interview on the carousel, I would have taken him up on it, Mirabella said. Next article, College and Career Fair gives students a jump start. The article starts with a participant shaking hands with a robot. The caption on the picture says, Herald and Review, Jim Bowling, must be for the picture credit, Sangamon Valley High School student Madison Palmer accepts the invitation to shake hands with a robot while listening to information about the Richland Community College Engineering Technology Department as fellow student Carmen Strike looks on during the Decatur Area College and Career Fair at the Decatur Fair here. Decatur, high school students such as Brock Askew are starting to ask questions about college. Askew, a senior at Eisenhower High School, said attending the Decatur Area College and Career Fair held Tuesday at the Decatur Indoor Sports Center was one of the first steps in having his questions answered. It's nice to see how many colleges travel here to talk to us, Askew said. It's better to talk to somebody who works there rather than just look online. Askew plans to make some on-campus visits in the next few months after soccer season wraps up before making a final decision in the spring. Partners in Education organizes the annual College and Career Fair as an opportunity for hundreds of students and their parents to gather information from over 80 post-secondary educational institutions, the Armed Forces and Resources Services said. Renee Stivers, Partners in Education Director, Millikan University provides transportation for students from around the Decatur area, she said. There's something for every student, Stivers said. This is a good time for them to start collecting information. Interested students are encouraged to use the information gathered during the college fair to plan a campus visit, even for places that seemingly are in their backyard, said Shelby Baum, Visit and Communications Coordinator at Millikan. We always encourage them to come visit campus, Baum said. Coming to campus is the best way for them to see what we have to offer. Visiting campus can be a way to have all the individual questions answered, said Tricia Korjalak, Richland Community College Director of Scholarships and Alumni Relations. Richland tried to create a visual opportunity for students to see its various options with exhibits for several of its programs. They can see even more by going to campus, Korjalak said. They can go in and see the labs with bigger pieces of equipment, Korjalak said. We can turn the equipment on and show them even more hands-on experience. It's well worth it. Financial aid continues to be among the top questions from students, he said. It's Tricia Korjalak. Financial aid is a big one, said Victor Overland, an Eisenhower senior. Representatives from colleges away were encouraging students to consider visiting their campuses. They can go outside their comfort zone, said Annalise Salgado, an admissions counselor at Azusa Pacific University in Southern California. It's a great location. We have perfect weather. Students could consider an international experience as Catherine Yates was presenting information about De Montfort University in the United Kingdom. It's another option to consider, said Yates, an international recruitment officer. Some are very interested in it. She said American students can easily integrate into the United Kingdom. End of this article. Next, an editor's pick. A Decatur School Board Tackles Healthcare by Ryan Voiles of the H&R staff. Decatur. The Decatur School Board will keep track on health insurance policies on certain education support personnel. The board was briefed on the policy during its meeting Tuesday night as Todd Kovalt, Chief Operational Officer for the district, walked members through an initial reading on how the policy works and how it's being affected by the Affordable Care Act. The policy focused on those employees not associated with union contracts, such as registered nurses not licensed by the Illinois State Board of Education, parent liaisons, a few potential substitute teachers, and some other educators. Kovalt said that under the current language, the district must offer coverage to 70% of full-time employees through the end of next June, and the plan cannot exceed 9.5% of household income. By July 1st, the district will have to provide coverage to 95% of eligible employees. If the district does not provide the coverage, it can be fined $2,000 for each full-time employee minus the first 30. We're talking about a penalty that could be in the $2.3 million range, so this is pretty significant, Kowalt said. A full-time employee is described as anyone who works at least 30 hours a week. Kowalt said the tricky situation for the district are the substitute teachers who work every day. A substitute hired for 3 months or less can be considered a variable hour employee, while substitutes who work longer could be considered full-time. So that employees are properly covered, the board will have to approve a policy to make sure documentation is kept and sent to the IRS to show employees meet the full-time equivalency requirement and are provided a single health insurance policy. Policy will be brought back to the board in November for a second reading and an expected vote. End of that article. Next news article is on proposal seeks to pre-register teens to vote. Springfield, Illinois could boost voter Springfield, Illinois could boost voter participation if it begins pre-registering teenagers when they get their first driving permit. That was just one idea that emerged during an hour-long hearing Tuesday on a plan to make voter registration automatic whenever someone updates or gets a new driver's license. Automatic registration already in place in Oregon and California has the backing of a number of groups and government officials. Creating an automatic registration makes voting simpler and knocks down a major barrier that keeps people from voting, Delilah Ramirez of Common Cause, Illinois, told a panel of senators discussing the plan. Noah Pritz, Director of Elections for Cook County Clerk David Orr, said that about half the people getting driver's licenses don't register to vote. He suggested pre-registering 16-year-olds when they first come in the doors for their learning permits, so they're already in the system when they turn 18. State Senator Andy Menard, Democrat Bunker Hill, is sponsoring the legislation. He said the change would be a significant step forward in ensuring more people head to the polls. The current process creates an unnecessary barrier for citizens to exercise their fundamental right to vote and is an inefficient use of taxpayers' dollars, Menard said. The proposal changes current registration laws so that whenever someone applies for, updates, or renews a driver's license or state ID, they'll automatically register to vote in the local jurisdiction. Currently, there are about 7.5 million registered voters in a state where there are more than 9.9 million potential voters. Automatic registration is a cost-saving measure that also increases the state's ability to monitor against fraud or mistaken registration, said Kathleen Yang Clayton of Asian American Advancing Judgment. Asian American Advancing Justice. State Senator Chris Nybo, Republican Elmhurst, said Republicans are concerned about the cost of altering computers to handle the change, as well as the possibility of voter fraud. But Nybo said GOP lawmakers were still reviewing the measure. The legislation is Senate Bill 2134. End of article. Next, American Heart Association Walk raises funds, awareness. This is from Decatur by Emily Steele from the H&R staff. For the past 3 years, Team Cannonball has lined up at the starting line for the Macon County Heart Walk. That's as many years Cannon Ross, who was born without part of his heart, has been alive. It's important for us to raise awareness for those born with congenital heart defects, said his mother, Heather Ross. People don't realize every 1 in 100 babies is born with a defect, and there's not a lot of funding for it. The annual 1 mile and 5K walk is a fundraiser for the American Heart Association, Saturday, October 24th. The goal is to raise $65,000 that goes towards research, CPR training, and changes in public policy. It's such a good cause, Ross said. At 3 years old, Cannon has had two open heart surgeries and is waiting for another. Heart defects are common and could be as small as a heart murmur or a hole, up to rare cases such as Cannon, where he's missing a left ventricle. Cannon will be joined by a team of friends and family, as well as nurses from the St. Louis Children's Hospital. We always end up hearing amazing survival stories, event chairman Matt Briggs said. Unfortunately, everyone out there has been affected in some way by heart disease or a stroke. Briggs said many people have been touched by heart diseases. This past year, his own family was touched when a family member and close family friend died from heart attacks. He also pointed to the community-wide loss when Mayor Mike McElroy died of a heart attack in July. Even the stories of loss in this case helps get the message out there, Briggs said. In Illinois, the American Heart Association has funded $16 million in cardiovascular research, trained more than 600,000 people in CPR, and advocated for legislation such as Lauren's Law, which requires high schools to teach CPR. In June, the association was able to donate training kits to all the high schools in Macon County through a private donation. Beside the walk, there will be healthy trick-or-treating, a costume contest, and vendors. Heart disease and stroke survivors will receive hats and pins. End of that article. And in the last article for part one for Decatur on this Wednesday, October 14th, it's getting harder to separate a super PAC from candidates' campaign. This is by Joseph Tanfani and Seema Mehta for the Tribune Washington Bureau. Long before Ben Carson jumped into the presidential race, some of his big fans were scouring the country for supporters. They set up a super PAC and began a mail campaign, eventually attracting thousands who signed up and gave money. When Carson actually got around to running, those names jump-started his early fundraising, according to John Philip Sousa IV, great-grandson of the composer and chairman of the 2016 committee, a super PAC packing Carson. It was that list that launched his campaign, Sousa said. The power of super PACs was unleashed by a series of Supreme Court decisions dating back to 1976, including Citizens United in 2010, that opened the door to unlimited contributions to political groups, as long as they didn't coordinate with campaigns. This presidential cycle, the rules being stretched like never before, super PACs shadow candidates and take on roles once reserved for the campaign organizations themselves, even staging campaign rallies. Some of the super PACs and the campaigns are run by revolving door of close friends and staffers, ensuring that the two sides share a common playbook even when they avoid tripping over the vague Federal Election Commission rules banning coordination. One Democratic commissioner at FEC said she's very concerned about the growing influence of super PACs and frustrated about the inability of her agency to do anything about it. These super PACs are more and more operating as arms of the campaign, said Ellen Weintraub, a former campaign finance lawyer. I just find it hard to reconcile the notion there's no potential for corruption with super PACs raising and spending unlimited amounts of money. Much of the basic political grunt work for Carly Fiorina's campaign is being handled by a super PAC, Carly for America, which sends staff and volunteers to shadow her on the campaign trail, setting up tables, taking down voters' names, and handing out buttons and bumper stickers. Groups supporting Hillary Rodham Clinton are part of this phenomenon, too. A rapid response group called Correct the Record broke away from a pro-Clinton super PAC and is now working directly with the campaign. A spokeswoman for the group contends an FEC loophole means that the coordination regulation doesn't apply to them because their work is only online. The close relationship between super PACs and candidates this time really puts the test that candidates were poking holes in the argument that because super PACs are independent, there's no risk of corruption and unlimited donations to outside groups. It's going to be the end of this article, end of part one, Wednesday, October 14, 2015, Decatur Herald and Review. I will be back with part two in a moment.